KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
Time for the fish report here on KSDP. Lots to announce today as we have a harvest summary for the Alaska Peninsula, an opening announcement for Chignik, and escapement for all the rivers across the peninsula, plus Bristol Bay with their first day of harvest summary. Let's start with the Alaska Peninsula, where we saw a big increase in the fish out west. 105,000 sockeye were delivered yesterday, June the 18th, 2025, for a total now 314,000 to date. 25,000 pinks delivered for a total of 50,000, and 30,000 chum for a total of 83,000. The Sugarman Islands saw 17,000 sockeye delivered yesterday for a total of 54,000 to date. 5,000 pinks for a total of 10,900 to date, and 6,000 chum for a total of 13,000. 82,000 sockeye were marked delivered yesterday in the Unimak area for a total of 244,000 to date. 19,000 pinks for a total of 38,000, and 24,000 chum for a total of 70,000 to date. Nelson Lagoon had 7,000 sockeye delivered yesterday. They're now at 16,000 to date, and nothing new over in Port Muller to Outer Port Hyden at this time. Looking at the in-season harvest estimates and summary for Bristol Bay, yesterday, June the 18th, they had a total delivery of 230,000 sockeye. By the rivers, the Ugashik was 69,000, Egigik with 132,000, Naknek with 27,000, and Togiak with 800. Again, so far, as of June the 18th, 2025, they had 230,000 sockeye delivered in Bristol Bay. There is a 48-hour opening happening in Chignik, so they will have fishing opportunities in Chignik beginning on Friday, June the 20th at 10 p.m. and going until 10 p.m. Sunday, June the 22nd. That will be in the Eastern, Western, Perryvilles, Central, and Chignik Bay districts. For the escapement yesterday, they had 27,000 sockeye go up the Weir for a total now of 100,000 to date, which puts them well in line for the June 20th escapement objectives. Looking at escapement across the systems across the peninsula, Nelson River had 6,900 fish go up the Weir yesterday for a total of 23,000 to date, which is far and away the best in the last 10 years. 2,200 over in the Bear River for a total of 6,100 to date, about mid-range for that system. Illinik with 118 for a total now of 11,000, which is the lower midpoint for the Illinik River in the last 10. Orzinski had no fish up the Weir yesterday. They're at 188 to date, which is still the best in the last 10. And Ilyuk had 4 fish go up the system for a total of 23 to date. Nothing new for Kodiak, so that will do it for the fish report here on KSDP. This report was brought to you by the Aleut Corporation. Stay tuned for more great programming coming up right now.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP. Starting with job openings, the QT Tribe of Sandpoint is hiring a grant writer, an executive director, and an administrative assistant. The City of Sandpoint is hiring a part-time pull tab sales assistant and a mechanic. The King Cove Department of Public and Safety is looking to hire a certified police officer. Interested applicants can contact the King Cove PD at 907-497-2210. APIA is hiring an ICCO caseworker for Sandpoint and a lead Head Start teacher for King Cove. EATS is hiring a behavior health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They are also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for False Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. And today is June 19th, 2025. Happy birthday to Janie Gunderson. Happy birthday to Dakota Walker. And happy anniversary to Marge and Daniel Gould. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day. It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, scattered showers, mainly after 1 p.m. Mostly cloudy with highs near 48. East winds 10 to 25 miles per hour with gusts as high as 30. Tonight, showers, mainly between 7 p.m. and 4 a.m. Then rain after 4 a.m. Lows around 46. East winds 30 to 35 miles per hour. And Friday, rain mainly before 1 p.m., then scattered showers after 1 p.m. Highs near 49, south winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There was a low tide at 3:37 a.m. at 1 foot 9 inches, a high at 9:10 a.m. at 4 feet 7 inches, a low at 3 o'clock at 1 foot 3 inches, and a high at 9:51 tonight at 6 feet 9 inches. Your sun rose at 6 a.m. this morning, and your sun will set at 11:26, giving us 17 hours and 27 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I am Amy Mack. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Today on KUCB News, after more than a week, the fire on board an abandoned cargo ship near Adak is out. And there's a new book of stories about Alaska's glaciers. All of that and more coming up.
Support comes from GCI, introducing GCI Plus Internet and Mobile to help customers stream, work, and connect without limits. Terms and conditions apply. Details at gci.com/gci-plus.
You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. It's Wednesday, June 18th, 2025. I'm Sophia Stewart-Rossi with some local news. Officials say the fire appears to be out aboard a cargo ship near the remote Aleutian island of Adak. No pollution was reported to have reached the water, and the ship is expected to be towed away from the area soon. Earlier this month, a fire broke out aboard the Morning Midas, a 600-foot vessel carrying thousands of vehicles, some of them electric. The U.S. Coast Guard responded to the fire alongside Resolve Marine, a salvage company contracted by the ship's manager. According to a statement from the ship's manager, Zodiac Maritime, firefighting specialists see no signs of an active fire aboard the vessel. Last week, a tugboat arrived on scene to stabilize the ship and control its movement. The Garth Foss, another tugboat with specialized firefighting capabilities, arrived a few days later and took over. A third tug is expected to arrive within a week to tow the Morning Midas away. A representative for Zodiac Maritime did not immediately respond to a question about the ship's final destination once the third tugboat arrives. The Morning Midas was about 220 miles south of Adak early last week. Adak is the westernmost municipality in the United States and a former naval base with about a few dozen permanent residents today. While millions across the country were rallying on Saturday for No King's Day, protesting President Donald Trump's policies, Ketchikan held a Unity for Community Fest. It was the first annual event that was promoted as a celebration of the American flag holiday and an effort to bring the community together rather than divide it. KRBD's Maria Dudzak has this story.
Hundreds of small American flags, placed several feet apart, outlined Ketchikan's Alder Park. While kids played games or enjoyed a bouncy house, adults relaxed and socialized, and volunteers grilled hot dogs and hamburgers while music played in the background. It was a relaxed picnic atmosphere on a beautiful sunny day, with people casually coming and going. Darlene D. Svensson is one of the organizers. She says the event's purpose is to celebrate Flag Day and bring people of all opinions together.
We are all Americans before we're anything else, and we've just chosen to celebrate being Americans.
Along Bryant Street, adjacent to the park, other flags flew on flagpoles. These included an Alaska state flag, Trump 2024 flag, an upside-down Knights Templar flag, and a flag that read, "God, Guns, and Guts Made America. Let's keep all three." Asked about the flags, DeSvensson said the event was not political.
Ketchikan Patriot, as far as we are concerned, is whomever you are. Some people believe in Trump, some people believe in something different. What you didn't notice is the very first flag of the United States of America, an appeal to heaven. You also will notice one of the Old Glory 13 flags, Betsy Ross. So it's the history of America and where we are.
Attendees were invited to sign a ballot petition to repeal Alaska's ranked choice voting system and a second petition in support of an indoor shooting range in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. One of the attendees was Kathleen Yar.
I've heard that there are divisions within our community, and so I wanted to come out and say that our community is fine and we're going to be fine. We need to have unity.
Willard Jackson Sr. is a Vietnam vet who lives next door to the park. He says he enjoys attending events at the park.
I came to come over and have a free hot dog and talk to some of my veteran friends.
Jackson said he was looking forward to the U.S. Army's 250th anniversary parade later that evening in Washington, D.C. Door prizes donated by local businesses were given out throughout the afternoon. DeSvensson says this is the first of what is planned to be an annual event. In Ketchikan, I'm Maria Dudzak.
Although Alaska is the land of 100,000 glaciers, only 700 of them have names, and they are featured in a new book by a Homer writer called The Alaska Glacier Dictionary. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, it's more than a reference book, but full of stories.
In the course of her job as a journalist, Naomi Clouda stashed notes on Alaska glaciers into back drawer folders. But one day, they took on a life of their own.
Every glacier has a story, and no two are alike. They're very individual.
Yet part of everyday life, more than we might realize, like when you turn on the tap in Anchorage to drink glacial meltwater, or eat giant vegetables from the Matsu, raised in rich glacial silt.
Remember, glaciers were roads, too. They were places that were used by people. They were not just isolated outposts. Like the Valdez Glacier was lived on, tented on, slept on, carted all kinds of things over it to get over to the Copper River area in the Gold Rush era.
Clouda says her glacier dictionary is for travelers and armchair adventurers alike to give them quick access to a glacier's vital stats and nuggets of history.
There's no one compilation that gives you all of the information that this glacier dictionary does. And so it's sort of a baseline.
In this time of change, having that in one handy resource is very valuable.
Rick Toman is one of Alaska's foremost Arctic climate specialists. He says information about glaciers is scattered across maps and numerous studies.
But this is the kind of compilation of disparate material that its value will grow in the coming decades when some of this information will be even harder to acquire and some of those glaciers will be no more.
At least one glacier has disappeared since Clouda started work on her book, which she sees as a work in progress to be updated periodically. Toman is glad that Clouda has included the indigenous names for glaciers because they offer clues to a glacier's past.
Here in the interior, there's names that sure sound like they refer to times when the glaciers were much more advanced than they are in the historic period.
There are some really beautiful Alaska Native designations on glaciers. They'll be very descriptive.
Like Kidaz Kuni, the Dena'ina name for a glacier on Mount Spur.
And it means one that is burning inside. Now, picture this glacier is on Mount Spur. So in local memory, in indigenous memory, they would have known about the times that Mount Spur had erupted.
Clouda also says the names of Alaska glaciers tell the story of colonialism. Most were named after explorers, politicians, or other well-known figures of the day, often people who had never set foot in Alaska. When geologists from the U.S. Geological Survey mapped and named glaciers, they often supplanted indigenous names or failed to acknowledge the contributions of Alaska natives, like the Athabascan hunting party led by Chief Sesuwi, who came to the rescue of some explorers after a bear raided their cache.
They found a bear and took it, and then found bacon inside the bear and thought, well, that's weird. You know, why would there be bacon inside this bear?
After killing the bear, Chief Sesuwi followed its tracks, found the men who were lost and on the verge of starvation, took them to his village, fed and clothed them for several months, and when the weather improved, guided them to the Yukon. But when it came to naming a glacier on the north side of Mount Foraker, it was the Army lieutenant who led the expedition, Joseph Herron, who was remembered with the name Herron Glacier, not Chief Sesuwi.
So these glaciers are part of our lives, and to tell the story of glaciers is to tell a human story.
That's why Clauda says the name of the glacier is literally the tip of the iceberg. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Let's take a look at KUCB's community calendar this week. A Juneteenth celebration will be held tomorrow evening from 6 to 8 o'clock at the Unalashka Community Park. The event will commemorate the emancipation of enslaved African Americans and celebrate Black freedom, culture, and excellence. The PCR is hosting the gathering, which will feature music by DJ Carlos, a barbecue provided by the Unalashka Fire Department, and time for community members to reflect and celebrate Black history and achievements. A planning meeting for the upcoming community art show scheduled for spring 2026 at the Museum of the Aleutians will be held Friday evening from 5 to 7 o'clock at the Unalashka Public Library Community Room. Community members are invited to help plan the event. The summer solstice run for ages 9 and up will take place Friday evening from 7 to 8 o'clock at Carl E. Moses Dock. Each participant will receive a summer solstice run bracelet, and interested runners can contact the PCR for more information. For more information on these events or for more events happening later this month, head to our community calendar at kucb.org. That's the news from Unalashka. KUCB will not have a newscast tomorrow because of Juneteenth. I'm Sophia Stewart-Rossi, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. Have a good weekend.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
A Kodiak commercial fisherman flew to Washington, D.C. to testify about the impacts of illegal fishing to a U.S. Senate subcommittee. KMXT's Brian Venois talked to the fisherman as well as Senator Dan Sullivan about why it's important to keep their eyes on other countries' fisheries.
Gabriel Prout and his family have sailed the Silver Spray, a Kodiak-based commercial fishing boat, for about 20 years. But on June 12th, he traded his extra tufts and fishing gear for a suit to represent Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers, a fishermen association.
So I think this is just kind of my way of doing my part. And when Senator Sullivan's office calls you and says, hey, we'd like you to testify on this issue, it's hard to turn down.
He spoke to the Senate Subcommittee on Coast Guard, Maritime, and Fisheries.
Thank you for the opportunity to appear today to discuss the devastating impact of IUU, illegal, unreported, and unregulated crab fishing, and unfair Russian and Chinese trade practices on American crab fishermen and coastal communities.
Prout presented a few ideas to the subcommittee he thinks could help, like better monitoring seafood imports and mandating labels for countries of origin. He also accused other countries of having more subsidies for fishermen than the U.S. does and asked for programs to help fishermen facing rising costs.
And create low-interest loans to help crabbers and fishing fleets modernize gear and remain competitive throughout the world. Prioritize support for small, independent, family-owned fishing operations like those that I represent.
Prout says these kinds of programs can help level the playing ground when competing in international markets against producers like China, who use slave labor and other cost-cutting measures to drive down seafood prices.
I mean, if you have a product coming into the country that's cheaper, more readily available, it's really hard to compete with that. So that's one of the big issues about IUU is that it forces downward pressure on prices and affects, you know, small and local fishing families.
Sullivan says taking on illegal fishing is high on his priorities list and could see some bipartisan support for the issue.
This brings together people who care about fisheries, human trafficking, slave labor, sustainable oceans, the environment, national security. It's a combination of many of those issues.
Earlier this year, President Donald Trump signed an executive order titled Restoring American Seafood Competitiveness, which pushes federal officials to consider appropriate responses to IUU fishing. Sullivan floated the idea of working with allied countries to monitor fishing fleets in international waters, particularly boats from China.
You know, unfortunately, some of our partners and allies in Africa and South America, they don't have very big coast guards. They have very little navies. They're super vulnerable to this kind of intimidation and gray fleet activity by the Chinese fleet. But that's not the same with us in Japan and some of our European allies.
Sullivan introduced a bill called the Fish Act, or Fighting Foreign Illegal Seafood Harvest Act, last month. The bill has multiple goals in targeting IUU fishing, including encouraging working with partner countries to inspect suspicious boats and establishing a blacklist of fishermen and boats that are caught fishing illegally. He says he hopes to include some of the provisions in a future defense bill. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Amid an outcry from tribes and subsistence advocates, the federal council that manages the Bering Sea pollock fishery says it is still undecided on when it might take action to potentially restrict the amount of chum salmon that trawlers can scoop up as bycatch. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council says funding and scheduling concerns could delay final action on chum bycatch until April 2026. The potential delay has been criticized by those who say chum salmon crashes across western Alaska, especially on the Yukon River, require swift action. The Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association advocates for dozens of communities now in their sixth year of near-total salmon fishing closures. The group's executive director, Serena Alstrom, called in to the council's recent meeting in Oregon on June 10th to stress the importance of sticking to the original December timeline.
The people who call the Yukon River region home simply cannot afford the luxury of a postponement. Their livelihoods, their traditions, and their very future hinge upon timely and effective interventions.
Earlier this year, the council heard 3 days of testimony on chum bycatch from voices across western Alaska, as well as from representatives of the multi-billion-dollar pollock industry. At that February meeting, it took a step closer to final action on the controversial bycatch issue by laying out a complex set of potential options, ranging from taking no action to implementing a hard cap on the number of chum taken as bycatch in the Bering Sea. but the timeline for the final decision on CHUM has now been thrown into question. The council says there's simply not enough time to address all of the items on its agenda for its next meeting, scheduled for the beginning of December in Anchorage. One proposal by the council is to make space for the CHUM hearing by moving other items that are considered must-do items to a virtual meeting later in December, but that plan runs up against other scheduling conflicts. This also comes at a time of funding uncertainty at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the agency that distributes federal funding to the council. As of June 9th, the council said it had received less than half of its annual grant funding for 2025, despite being three-quarters of the way through its fiscal year. Council Chair Angel Drobnicka says the council intends to schedule final action on CHUM bycatch as soon as possible, but that a lot of question marks remain.
Obviously, there are a lot of compounding issues that we're facing right now. Currently, you know, as others have stated, while we're very hopeful that we'll receive our next grants, we do not have money to even host an October virtual meeting.
Drobnicka says the council will likely make a decision about the timing of a CHUM bycatch hearing in the coming weeks. Whether or not the council moves to delay the decision, it isn't clear which option it may choose for managing CHUM salmon bycatch. The council contends that the CHUM bycatch predominantly consists of Russian and Asian hatchery fish, and that roughly 17% of those CHUMs on average over the last decade were from stocks bound for Western Alaska rivers. At the same time, the volume of CHUM bycatch recorded in the pollock fishery has dropped significantly in recent years, from a high of more than 500,000 fish in 2021 to just over 35,000 in 2024. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Salmon have returned to the Kuskokwim, which for many means it's time to pukuk or clear out their freezers. Last week, a Kuskokwim River environmental advocacy group hosted a return of the salmon celebration. As KYUK's Samantha Watson reports, the event was about bridging environmental advocacy with excitement for the start of the fishing season.
Did you bring your ulu? It's gutted?
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing fish.
In Lions Club Park in Bethel, Melanie Taikupa Brown leans over a salmon, gutting it with care. The Kuskokwim River it once swam in flows behind her. Soon, the salmon will be grilled in the pop-up park barbecue as a small crowd gathers for the community meal of fish and hot dogs. Posters for the event invited community members to pukuk their freezers, which, Brown says, is a way of cleaning out reserves of last year's salmon to make room for new catches. The Return of the Salmon celebration is put on by the grassroots organization Mother Kuskokwim, a group formed in opposition to the proposed Donlin Gold Mine project's environmental impacts. Brown works as the outreach director for Salmon State, an advocacy organization promoting policies that protect wild salmon habitats across Alaska that's partnered with Mother Kuskokwim.
Unfortunately, there's some threats that exist to the continuation of salmon returning that are upstream threats from potential mining activity. And then also there's some things happening in the ocean that are keeping king salmon and chum salmon from returning home.
The decline in salmon populations along the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers has been attributed to changes in climate, including warmer ocean temperatures. This year marks the sixth consecutive year of salmon fishing closures on the Yukon River. On the Kuskokwim, salmon fishing is still open, but environmental advocacy groups like Mother Kuskokwim say the river still faces human-related threats, including bycatch from large-scale fishing on the Bering Sea. The proposed Donlin Gold Mine upriver has been the center of regional controversy. One focus point is the potential environmental impact were the tailings dam holding the mine's hazardous waste to fail. In 2022, YK Delta community opposition spurred the creation of Mother Kuskokwim and its mission of protecting the river and its surrounding land areas from the proposed mine.
This essential food source that really focuses cultural lifeways of the people is being disrupted. And so this is meant to be a celebration, but also kind of a call to action for people to really come together around their love of salmon.
After they fill their plates with fresh salmon and other potluck dishes, the small crowd settles into picnic tables and folding chairs for a June afternoon of live music. They'll also be entered in a raffle for a 150-foot fishing net and other prizes lined up by Mother Kuskokwim. The event is a mix of community jubilee and a call to protect the salmon they're celebrating. Here's musician Mike McIntyre.
We have a really valuable resource here, a very valuable resource for all of us to eat while we go out there and try to live with this. Just to have a mind that is threatening our people, our way of life. It makes you want to fight.
Fight!
As people fill up on fresh and cooked salmon, the river flows past Lions Club Park. Birds and small boats punctuate its vast expanse. In June, it's a nod to what is to come. Empty freezers now ready to fill up during the summer season ahead on the Kuskokwim. In Bethel, I'm Samantha Watson.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
We'll be right back. tall and she grew up right with them Indiana boys on an Indiana night. Well, she moved down here at the age of 18. She blew the boys away, it was more than they'd seen. I was introduced and we both started grooving. She said, I dig you, baby, but I got to keep moving. With Mary Jane, one more time to kill the pain. I feel summer creeping in and I'm tired of this town town. Oh my, my, oh hell yes, honey, put on that party dress, buy me a drink, sing me a song, take me as I come, cause I can't stay long. Last dance with Mary Jane, one more time to kill the pain. I feel summer creeping in and I'm tired of this town again. She's standing in her underwear, looking down from a hotel room. The nightfall will be coming soon. Oh my, my, oh hell yes, you got to put on that party dress. It was too cold to cry when I woke up alone. I hit my last number, I walked to the road. Last dance with Mary Jane, one more time to kill the pain. I feel summer creeping in and I'm tired of this town again.
Listening to 8:30 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska.
Down.
give it a try, honey.
Thank you.
You are listening to KSDP Radio, 830 AM Sandpoint, 880.1 FM.